is gonna run away, and the creeks won't flow to the great lake below. Will the water in the well still be okay?
Welcome to the Trailblazers and Troublemakers podcast. I'm your host, Scott Costin. My guest today is Sarah Harmer, an award-winning singer-songwriter, longtime environmental activist, and all-round national treasure. Her latest album is the critically acclaimed Are You Gone, which is available on vinyl, CD, and for download at saraharmer.com. Welcome to the podcast, Sarah.
Thank you so much.
So, Sarah, a year ago, as Canada was recording its first cases of COVID-19, you were in the process of releasing Are You Gone, and that's your first studio album in 10 years. You were also preparing to embark on a 41-show North American tour. And I'm just wondering, how difficult, how devastating was it for you to have to cancel that tour?
I mean, it was made a lot less devastating by the fact that everybody was in the same position. You know, every walk of life was affected. And so it was interesting because I really had kind of got the wheels starting to churn, and a lot of rehearsing, a lot of organizing, a lot of planning. I was kind of coming back out of my shell, you know? And so it was one of those kind of wild dawnings when it just realized, okay, this is also going to affect us. It's not just something that we're going to be exempt from. And it was kind of hard for me, mostly, I think, thinking about my bandmates and my agents and, you know, people that had been doing a lot of prep and work for this. I was mostly, the consolation for me, I was mostly happy with was that I had finally made this record and it was out and it was available. And so I felt like, okay, at least the record got out the door.
Well, you mentioned you came out of your shell. What put you in your shell to begin with? What were you doing for those 10 years?
I like my shell. I mean, I was doing a bit of music and stuff here and there, I'm a homebody, I would say. So definitely lots of gardening, lots of tree planting, lots of just kind of husbandry around the homestead. I had been doing some, you know, regular citizen work, organizing on some small local scales around issues of endangered species and, land use planning stuff. I don't know. I was just kind of living a life but it didn't really include putting out new music and getting on too many stages.
The inability to tour isn't just about dollars and cents. I think, was there some loss of like that connection to your fans that you were looking forward to having again that you were deprived of?
I was really looking forward to it. It was, again, it was just kind of like re-engaging, you know, and finally having kind of followed through on these ideas that I had had for a number of years, like some of these songs I had been kind of mulling over for a long time, and to finally kind of record them and execute them and have them ready to go. I was really excited to share those with different places, different people. It was a bit daunting, honestly, too, though, to be like, oh, wow, we're going to be in a van, you know, driving huge distances. And it's like the grind of it was something I was definitely like, okay, this is going to be a little bit challenging for the first while. But I was really looking forward to singing these songs and remembering that part of my self, or my life, I guess.
So you started out in bands at the tender age of 17 with an alt country act called the Saddle Tramps. You eventually formed your own group, Weeping Tile, in 1992 before eventually going solo around, I think it was 1999. You're kind of a musical chameleon, if you don't mind that term, because you seem to have dabbled in rock and pop, folk, country, blues, gospel. Is that diversity a product of your upbringing? Is it a reflection of your own musical tastes, or is it perhaps an indication of some kind of artistic restlessness?
I mean, I don't know if I've really delved into the blues. I would maybe take that back a little, but I mean, it centers around an acoustic guitar for the most part, as far as the writing, songwriting goes. And it's been influenced by different bands that I've loved and some bands that I've become, you know, friends with, like bluegrass pickers, you know, who I've kind of spent a summer with or whatever, and really delved into. I mean, that's going back quite a few years now, but it's really been just not too much of a thought out plan as far as where I go musically. It's usually just, you know, I guess I do listen to quite a wide range of music, and I just pick up a guitar and it goes a certain way, and the songs usually dictate what I think the production should be and who I should collaborate with. I would put, say, 5 of my solo records together and listen to them end to end. And I don't think it's really too wide of a range. I mean, I think there's still kind of a roots folk bass, you know. I've also always, you know, been drawn to like scrappier college rock bands. And I mean, more so when I was, you know, in my 20s, but going out to see a lot of bands. And so like really fired up by electric guitar and kind of messier music as well. So that has definitely made its way into my tastes and to some records.
And no matter what, you know, kind of musical genre you're dealing in, you always return to the land and the water and the air. You know, your lyrics are filled with references to lakes, rivers, creeks, mountains, valleys. I'm just wondering why the natural environment is such a recurring theme in your songs.
I mean, I would guess that it's probably because I grew up on a farm. I spent most of my time as a kid outside, you know, with my free time. I was always really drawn to meandering. I think, especially touring a lot too, I kind of did lose my interest in people for a while. Like I was more interested in the kind of more than human world of the deer in the backyard and the hooting owls. And, you know, that kind of piqued my enthusiasm, imagination, I think, more than human constructs have. Ebbs and flows, you know. I'm kind of a bit more interested in people now, probably because I've been pretty isolated in some ways, especially with COVID-19. You know, it's like it's been a pretty non-social time, and so I'm feeling like feeling kind of more interested in conversation and just human invention and thought. But yeah, I think that the patterns are probably more obvious to other people, someone else listening, kind of what I fall back on. But it's, for me, it's just kind of, I guess, some natural places to put my thoughts. And I do tend to write about the natural world, but it's not really that, I don't set out to do that too much. It just seems to be what filters through.
Now, you mentioned human connections and maybe, you know, missing them, especially now with the pandemic. On that topic, you've done some really interesting collaborations over the years with, you know, members of Bare Naked Ladies, members of the Tragically Hip and Sky Diggers and, you know, a whole range of people. What have been some of your favorite collaborations or duets or projects that you've worked on with other musicians?
Yeah, I have done lots of fun sessions with other, you know, people that asked me to come in and sing on their records. I think of a band like the Weaker Thans. You know, I love their music and John K. Sampson's writing. And when he asked me to come and sing on I don't remember the name of the song offhand, but I was like, man, I've been singing harmonies along to your records, you know, for in my living room for a long time. So that was really, really exciting. And singing, same with Nico Case. When Nico asked me to come and sing on a song of her record, that was a great joy because I'm a big fan of hers, and so it's really cool. A band called the Minotaurs, or just rather Minotaurs. There's no the, I don't think. They're out of Guelph, Ontario, and they make really really lively, horn-driven, politically motivated music. And I sang with Minotaurs on a couple of their songs on their last two albums. And it was really, really fun to put my voice or have my voice involved in that kind of, I guess, Afro beat. I don't know what the genre is exactly, but it was really fired up, energetic music. And I really dug that a lot.
Yeah, it sounds great. I'm going to have to check that out after we're done speaking. Now, there was a review in the Boston Globe of your new album, Are You Gone? And I've listened to it several times. I think it's fantastic. I think it's as good as anything you've ever done. And the reviewer wrote that the natural world is as integral to many of these songs as her seemingly ageless smoky tea voice or the little accents of twangy or tropical guitar that bloom behind her vocals. The reviewer loved the album too. I don't think I've seen a negative review of it, to be honest, but I'm just wondering, do you pay attention to what critics say, and or even fans for that matter? Do you worry much what people say about your music, whether it's positive or negative?
I mean, I think ultimately I want to please myself. You know, I want to like it. I want to, and I think there are a few people out there who's maybe who I'm a fan of, you know, some friends and songwriters I know, and I'm like, I really want them to like this song or this part. But I would be lying if I didn't say that, or if I said that I didn't, you know, read some reviews or pay attention to feedback from people. And so that feels great. But ultimately I gotta like it before I put it out the, you know, out the door. And so that's who I'm mostly wanting to, you know, please, is my own taste, I guess.
Okay, I wanted to talk now about your activism, which you've been engaged in pretty much throughout your musical career. I'm a big fan of the song Escarpment Blues, which appeared on your 2005 album, I'm a Mountain. It draws attention to the long-running destruction of parts of the Niagara Escarpment to produce gravel and other construction aggregates. Can you tell listeners about that song, about the I Love the Escarpment tour that you did, and about the documentary that stemmed from all of that?
Yeah, well, that started really for our community in Burlington in about 2005 when, yeah, Lafarge Nelson Aggregate announced that they wanted to get a new license to expand their quarry operations at the top of Mount Nemo, which is an outlier that is part of the Niagara Escarpment, like you say, and it sits above the landscape. It's the fountainhead, really, of North Burlington and North Halton. It's got dozens of tributaries that emanate off the top of it and feed the watersheds. The Grindstone Creek is probably the biggest watershed that it feeds, but it's big source water area. And I grew up there. My parents still live on the farm there. And so I wrote Escarpment Blues when I was finding out about this, you know, transnational corporation's plans to further scalp this incredible, you know, 440 million year old rock formation, and all of the endangered species and wetlands and forests that are sitting on top of that rock. So, and the song really just tells that story about the well water concerns. People are all on wells up there, and the concerns about, you know, just continually eroding into our common heritage, natural heritage, are the living systems that keep us going, you know. And these precious places like a UNESCO World Biosphere Reserve that they still contemplate removing for crushed stone. It's like taking the most biologically rich area, like a world-class area known for its endangered species and biodiversity, so that they can mine the most generic, you know, dumbed down, homogenized bit of gravel. And so, yeah, we formed a community group after having a, you know, a meeting at the local church. A couple hundred people showed up and wanted to understand how to get involved. And we started PEARL, Protecting Escarpment Rural Land. And for about 8 years, we raised money to do science study, to do reviews of the quarry's application. And we went through a giant 15-month long hearing, a joint board hearing that, you know, listened to 59 experts cross-examined on this giant proposal. And in the end, in 2012, it was dismissed. It was turned down. Now, in 2019, the company has announced that they want to try again. They want to try again on some of the same land that they were denied initially, and now expanding into a new green space area on Mount Nemo. So we're back at it. As far as there's a new community group that is formed because, you know, some of the people that were in PEARL, kind of some have moved on. So CORE is a community group called CORE Burlington, C-O-R-E. And they're great on the ground community group. And myself and a couple other members of the original PEARL were supporting, helping, and you know, advocating once again for the protection of Mount Nemo. So it's pretty wild that you can lose, you know, after all this investment, after the company can lose and get dismissed, their application dismissed after governments have put in millions of dollars to, you know, make the case for protection. And then they can try again only, you know, 7 years later on the same land. So it's we're back, but we're still determined to make sure that there's no more extraction on top of Mount Nemo. It's given since the 1950s, even before that. So the Greater Toronto and Hamilton area has been well provided with rock from Mount Nemo, and we're telling decision makers that it can give no more.
Mount Nemo, for those who don't know, is an absolutely beautiful place. When I was a kid, I grew up in Hamilton. I used to go camping at Camp Nemo, the Cub Scout camp there. And we would go up on the Bruce Trail, and we'd go in the caves, and it's just an amazing, amazing place. And I hope you and the new group CORE continue to fight the good fight on that.
Thanks.
Not only are you an environmental activist, but you've been outspoken on a lot of other social justice issues. And with Weeping Tile many years ago, not to date you or me, because I saw Weeping Tile in concert once, you drew attention to the heartbreaking and infuriating 1992 Westray mine explosion here in Nova Scotia, where I'm interviewing you from. And for those who don't remember, the explosion was widely predicted. It was completely preventable. And it claimed the lives of 26 miners and left 43 children without fathers. And in the 1995 track Westray, I have to say, you sound more angry and more bitter than maybe on any other one of your songs. Why did that mine disaster register so deeply with you then?
I mean, I think I remember seeing the news about it. I remember the quote from the journalist saying, "My hopes exceed my expectations," as far as they hadn't found out exactly if people had died, and it was right as it had happened. And they were still trying to figure out how bad the extent of it was. And I think I was also at that time when I was starting to learn about corporate influence in government decision making. I was, you know, I was in my early 20s and just starting to learn about, you know, how money and shortcuts and shareholder profits were determining the operations of, like you say, a mining operation that had long predicted, you know, if they had continued cutting these corners, how disastrous it could be. So I guess, and that model, that kind of pattern of corporate neglect and really just focusing on quarterly profits continually plays out in the devastation of landscapes and people's lives, et cetera. So I think that was just like really the early days of me learning about that kind of corporate impunity and the devastation that can follow.
And more recently, I see that in July you did a Facebook Live concert to support Care Not Profits, which is a union-backed or union-coordinated campaign to end for-profit long-term care in Ontario. Can you tell us more about that campaign and why you got involved?
Yeah, I'm, like so many people, learning about how poorly run our long-term care facilities have been in Ontario specifically, and how, again, for so many years, people have been calling for particular changes that would really improve the situation as far as more staffing, more, compensation, et cetera, and bringing the profit motive into looking after our elderly, our, seniors, is just disastrous. And it's just another kind of similar, again, I'm no expert on the situation, but it just seems absolutely inappropriate to combine to put a profit motive in the long-term care field. Looking after our elders is something that is so important. My parents are my dad's in his early 90s, my mom's in her late 80s. I just that's a personal connection to people as they age. But it was just something I wanted to take part in, and it was for me an easy thing to be able to do, to play a little house concert to raise awareness about this petition, Care Not Profits. So that's how I got involved. It doesn't seem like the Ford government in Ontario has really made the necessary changes. It's really been a horrible situation here. So,
And the research has shown, there have been a couple of studies done already, which have clearly shown that there's been a far higher death rate in for-profit homes from COVID than in publicly run homes. So that alone seems to indicate that what's being asked here is scientifically valid. Now, on the new album, Are You Gone, you've got a song called New Low. And it's a really catchy, it's an infectious, upbeat song, but it's got a message that seems to resonate with the last few years, where we've had more citizen activism, more protests. Can you talk a bit about New Low and what were you trying to communicate with that song?
Yeah, I really think that the basic kind of seed of that song was just the idea of people, including myself, I think no one feels like they do enough, or most people don't feel like they do enough. And often it's just because you don't know how to help, how to get involved. And this song was just, the germ of it was really just to kind of, to get up, to just take a step I'd come home from being at a rally in Kingston, that was commemorating the people who were killed in the mosque shooting in Quebec City. So it was a number of Kingston community members from the Islamic faith, from the it's a real cross section of citizens. And previous week I'd been to another same location, downtown Kingston Market Square, the Women's March. And so it just felt like, yeah, more people were coming out, more people were feeling like they had a place to come together. And it was just about participation, and how, as Pete Seeger said, and I'm paraphrase, but just like, participation is what's going to save us, getting involved, even in small ways, just kind of stepping up. So the song's kind of got a fiery a little, yeah, it's got a kind of a motivating force, but it's really just a little kind of punky song. I didn't, again, it's usually looking back on it that you can kind of sum it up. But when I was coming up with the lyrics and stuff for it, it was really just trying to fit them into that melody, because the melody was really clear right from the beginning, how it would go. I just had to kind of find out how I would put some of these feelings I was feeling into it.
And you've got a really energetic kind of lyric video that goes along with that song as well, eh?
Yeah, Ann Doris is a graphic designer artist in Toronto, and she cut together a really great lyric video with a bunch of footage from the last number of decades, even some current stuff from protests and just the kind of human body kind of raising up to look out for itself and to push back against some of the problems that we're facing.
Now, on the subject of videos, you've got one that I think came out in early December that is just so whimsical and fun and interesting. And I was looking at the comments today on YouTube, and people just love it. It's like a nice escape from the pandemic blues, so to speak. But Little Frogs, can you tell us about that song and the video? It's quite different, especially I don't think I've ever seen you before with a puppet before in one of your videos.
Yeah, it is. Thank you. I'm glad. I really like it too. The song Little Frogs I wrote after I came across a list, just in a journal of things that I had wanted to remember about that previous summer. So it was just a few, just a list of little memorable moments that I didn't want to forget as the kind of summer was winding down. And I came across that list months later, and just kind of in a goofy frame of mind, thought, oh yeah, I could write a little tune around this. And I honestly didn't think that it was going to, I would record it, or that it would make it on. Yeah, that I just, because the lyrics were kind of, it starts out, pink fingerlings and Yukon golds dug up and drying on the floor. It was just kind of silly. And so I felt a bit sheepish about it in a way, as far as actual, like, quote unquote song. But what, like most songs, you play it for one or two people and then you're like, oh, okay, hey, I might have a new song here, So we recorded that. It was one of the last songs I recorded, just in my living room with my friend Jay Uhringer on stand-up bass, and this very stripped down song. And then put it out on the record. And my good friend Ali Eisner is a puppeteer. And Ali and I had talked, and we're really close pals, so we talk all the time. And Ali had said, like, we should do a video for Little Frogs. So we kind of, thought we would maybe. And then we just said, okay, well, we don't have much of a concept. Let's just do it like a day in the life of a little frog. We had a puppet maker in Toronto make the frog. Darren Pickering built this little hand puppet. And Ali and filmmaker Peter Schnaub came up to our house and spent a couple days just out on the lawn filming fun scenarios for this little guy. And then we shot some footage in our barn for the performance. And it's nice because that song features Jay Uhringer, my good friend, singing and playing bass, but he's singing the harmony. So the frog had some lines to sing. So it's a bit of a duet. And yeah, it is kind of an escape from the, especially as we're in a lot of clouds these days. There's a lot of winter kind of grayness. And so we captured the video in the fall, as there were still lots of beautiful colors and, flowers from the gardens and things that were still wistful and bright. So I'm glad that people are seeing it as a bit of an escape for 3.5 minutes into a bucolic little scene.
It is. It's a great video. And for anyone who's traveled through or lived in Eastern Ontario, there's that nice Eastern Ontario vibe. There's a quick shot of the town hall, the old town hall in Gananoque, and it's just very uplifting. I highly recommend people go on YouTube and check it out. So Sarah, I mentioned at the outset that people can buy physical copies of your music at saraharmer.com, but I see on there, there's also some other merchandise. Are there any items you want to promote in particular? And do you have any online events coming up in the near future?
I have a little, I'm actually sitting right now next to my little merch zone. I have, you know, some packing tape and brown wrapping paper and some t-shirts and sweatshirts and stuff. So I've been doing a little bit of mail out. And yeah, I mean, that's, people can see that at my website. And I made these upcycled hankies just from really from like Valley Village sheets that I went and bought and washed. And then, you know, cut in, and then learned how to silk screen and made just these little hankies. But I'm all through those. I just gave the last of those away because they were just throwing them into the, for the first couple hundred people that ordered. And so that's, but the t-shirts and sweatshirts and stuff are still available. I am not, I don't have any online shows planned right now. Yeah, I'm not really sure. I'm just kind of in a low state right now, as far as music, you know, sharing music right now. It's been pretty kind of woodshedding. And January, I'm definitely picking up the guitar here and there, but nothing to speak of as far as public shows.
Well, listen, it's been a real pleasure speaking with you, Sarah. Thanks again for joining me for the podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me, Scott. I appreciate it.
Fingerlings and Yukon Golds dug up and drying on the floor. Little frogs on the front lawn I didn't kill in the mower. Phoebe back to build again above the basement door. Dry owl wings and other things I'm wildly grateful for. September sun and weekday fun and being up when cars aren't cruising. A morning mist that slowly lifts and the daylight that we're losing. Cause there's more time with the stars that way. I'll hang